We are so, so excited to welcome such a super, super serious... Well, you're not serious, but I was just like, oh no. Oh no, the ambassador of Ukraine to Kenya is coming in. This is very intense. But actually, he is just such a lovely... I did get a hug in. Let me please introduce His Excellency Andriy Pravednik. Was that horrible?
No, that was great. You did it the right way.
Andriy, habari leo, Andriy? Habari?
Oh, habari leo. Zuri sana.
Yes!
Zuri sana.
There you go.
Andriy, can I call you Andriy? Sorry?
Yes, you're not definitely.
Have no me problems. Whacked. So, how long have you been in Kenya as the ambassador?
I have been working in Kenya for 2 years and 3 months. I really enjoy this beautiful country. And I'm honored and happy to serve my country in Nairobi.
So, completely random. I mean, full disclosure, I know very little about Ukraine. And I'm sorry for that. But that's why you're here, to tell me, to educate all of us. So, where is the Ukrainian embassy? And how many Ukrainians are in Kenya?
The embassy of Ukraine is located in Mutaiga, mm-hmm. on Limuru Road. The address is 674 Limuru Road. We are there for more than 15 years. We opened our embassy here in 2004, means it's even more than 15 years. In reality, it's 18 years will be this year. And there we are a small embassy. I have 6 other colleagues working with me. All of them are professionals, and I'm proud to serving together with him for the interests of both Kenya and Ukraine.
And I would just ask, we know why you're here, and we are going to get into the current affairs, but what are the top 3 things that the Ukrainian embassy is doing in Kenya, apart from, you know, not mentioning what's currently happening to your country or in your country?
Before the start of the Russian, full-scale Russian invasion to Ukraine, the main 3 areas of our focus were the trade and economic relations, and in particular development of our cooperation in agricultural sector, as well as machinery building, and secondly that the development of our cultural ties, and in particular the development of the educational exchanges. We noticed for the last 4 years that the number of young Kenyans willing to study in Ukraine was growing steadily. And the third area I would call the proper cultural exchanges, because we were planning, let's say, if it would not happen what happened, we were planning to bring Ukrainian ballet to Kenya.
No.
And some Ukrainian ballet dancers were willing to help young Kenyans living in Kibera slum.
Wow.
To learn ballet dancing, because some local Kenyans have a school in Kibera,
yes.
dancing school,
yep.
And they've been asked us to help them to bring ballet dancers and show talented young Kenyans how to dance ballet. Unfortunately, due to a variety of reasons, the first reason was COVID, and the second reason now that's Russian barbaric invasion to Ukraine. But I'm convinced that as soon as we win, we'll be able again to talk about these ballet dancers come to Kenya to show Kenyans how beautiful a ballet dancing is, and teach local talented children to dance ballet. And actually, honestly, from what I've seen for my 3 years being in Kenya, is that you have so many talented young Kenyans willing to learn, willing to study. And I think that not only Ukraine, but all the countries which have embassies here in Kenya should help these young, talented Kenyans to reach the sky.
Wow. Oh. Now, Ukraine obviously known as well for welcoming a number of Africans for studies. We've seen this, unfortunately, from the side of the war or the invasion. But that's an incredible thing that the Ukraine does. I had no idea until this invasion began that the Ukraine actually welcomes a lot of African students into to study and medicine as well, being one of the top areas.
Yes, you're definitely right. Before the invasion, we had... from Africa, we had more than 3,000 students. Ooh. From different African countries. And from Kenya, it were more than 300 students in different places in Ukraine. And I would like to mention about the one place which was heavily discussed all around the world and in African countries too, that the place called City of Sumy. There is a wonderful university in Sumy. And a lot of African students choose to study there. And there were 83 Kenyans studying at Sumy. And if you remember the developments, Russians took the Sumy under siege and they heavily bombarded the city. And the government of Ukraine was doing whatever is possible to take all these foreign students, including Kenyans, out to the safety. And the challenge was that the Russian troops were not in a position to agree for humanitarian corridor, or even if they formally agreed to that, they've broken that agreement, okay, let's say half an hour before the evacuation. Okay. But then, thanks God, we managed to create that humanitarian corridor, and all students were brought to safety, initially to Poltava. It's a city in Ukraine, and then from Poltava to western border of Ukraine. And now all African students who were willing to leave Ukraine for safety, either in Poland, Hungary, Slovakia, or Romania, but many of them already back home to their families.
Sure, I've read that. Yeah, absolutely.
Before we jump into what is currently happening, Andriy, or His Excellency Pravednik, please just paint the picture of Ukraine before all of this happened. What does it feel like? What does it taste like? What does it look like to us?
My country is very beautiful, and it has a thousand, even more than 1,000 years history. If to compare my country with Kenya, the territory of Ukraine is 30,000 kilometers bigger than Kenya, means they're comparable in size, and they're also comparable in population. The population of Ukraine is 43 million people, the population of Kenya, if I'm not mistaken, 47 or so, around that. Correct. Figure. My country also has a different climate zones. We have beautiful mountains called Carpathian Mountains. We have a seaside. It's a Black Sea. Then we have beautiful fields. One of the most known pictures of Ukraine is a picture when you see a blue sky and fields either wheat, which has a gold color, or the fields of sunflowers. Mm. And there is no exactly explanation. One, we have our national color in blue and yellow, but one of the stories, so to say, is that it's the blue indicates the blue sky we have, and the yellow indicates fields of wheat.
Okay, we're going to take a quick break. When we come back, obviously what's on the top of everyone's mind, and they want to hear from you as well, is the invasion, what it means, why did this happen, and we're going to get into that when we come back in just a few minutes. We have His Excellency, the Ukrainian Ambassador to Kenya, Andriy Pravednik, in studio with us this morning. If you have any questions, get them in Twitter or WhatsApp. You can send us voice notes if you'd like. You guys are discussing facts and figures and numbers, and I've got lost a little bit there, but you asked a very important question. The religious structure of the Ukraine, which would be predominantly...
Christian Orthodox.
Christian Orthodox. Okay, good. Now, I think let's get into the reason that we're here. this is not something that the Russian president woke up one morning and decided to do. This is a historical
plan you.
Uncomfortable situation, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yes.
And of course, Crimea played a big part in all of this as well, if I'm not mistaken. Why is, and let's just break it down, start from the ground zero, why is this happening?
Okay, I will try to make a long story short, which is challenging itself, since, okay, the origins of what is going now goes back into the history. And all that started at the beginning of 18th century when the then Russian Tsar Peter the Great decided to create a new state called Russia, which before that used to be called for 300 years Moscovia. And to in order to do that, he had to rewrite the history of the state, which had a name, Kievska Rus, and which was state of my people and my land. And then Peter the Great and then Catherine the Great and other Russian emperors, they imposed a very strict limitation on us for the use of our language, our culture, our literature. And to be honest with you, in mid-19th century, they thought Nicholas the First, introduce the complete ban on Ukrainian literature, Ukrainian culture, and Ukrainian language.
Wow.
But thanks to ordinary Ukrainian people, mostly peasants living in the countryside, they've managed to preserve the language, to preserve the culture. And then at the beginning of 20th century, we've been independent for 5 years, from 1917 to 1922. But then we've been forced to join the Soviet Union by Bolsheviks regime from Moscow, and we stay in the Soviet Union until 1991. And I think that I have to, okay, although, okay, we don't like figures, but I have to give you one figure, which is important for understanding for our, okay, how to say, not trust, but our belief in freedom and to be independent. In 1991, on the 24th of August 1991, our parliament called Verkhovna Rada proclaimed independence of Ukraine. But then parliament decided that it's so important issue that it should be brought to the national referendum. And we had our national referendum on the 1st of December 1991. And 94%, I would like to reiterate it, 94% of our population voted for independence. But, and that's the main reason why we have the Russian full-scale invasion to Ukraine, because Russian political elite could not accept the fact that Ukraine became independent, because a lot of Russian politicians, including that, I'm sorry, to call him, okay, not, I'm sorry to say that on the radio, but insane dwarf from Kremlin. he actually told that on many occasions that the greatness of Russia is not possible without Ukraine. Means he has that insane idea that Ukraine should be part of Russia, that we have the same language, we have the same culture, and we are simply the same people, which is not the truth.
I love that. First of all, I love that. And I love that you are speaking your mind, because that is what we're all about on 98.4 Capital FM. But I have to ask you, but why is the insane dwarf so fixated, as we'll now call him forever, with Ukraine? And why is he not saying that to everyone around? Why just Ukraine? Are you guys rich? Are you just fancy? Are you cool? Why Ukraine?
Can I just add, and also add on to Davina's question? If I'm, and I could be wrong here, there's a lot of other countries in the area post Soviet Union that have kind of sided with Russia. I think for Ukraine, if I'm not wrong, it was true independence. You were truly independent. You were not Russian. If you look at someone like Belarus, for example, they are still quote-unquote Russians.
But that's because he's his friend.
No, but he has a lot of friends in the area.
Okay, so
I'm not mistaken, right?
So
I'm correct.
Oh, you are saying the correct thing. Thank you for bringing that question on the table. Ukraine and some other post-Soviet countries Okay, consists of okay, like over two main how to say that
gangs.
Yes, one is really independent state. Which are Ukraine, Moldova, Georgia. We are not taking into account Baltic states because they've been part of the Soviet Union only for a little bit less than 50 years, and they've never been considered as part of Soviet Union by the rest of the world. The rest of the world considered them to be occupied by the Soviet Union. But if we take the rest of the Soviet republics, former Soviet republics, Ukraine, Moldova, and Georgia, Azerbaijan, they're really independent in a sense of that word. Yes, all others also, from the legal point of view, are independent states. But as you rightly mentioned, Belarus, from the legal point of view, is an independent state. But in real life, anything Lukashenko, the president of Belarus, is doing, he's doing in a close consultation, so to say, with that guy from Kremlin. Mm-hmm. Means they don't have a separate foreign policy, independent foreign policy. They don't have their separate economic policy, and they're under full control of the Russian Federation, like some other countries, to the lesser extent than Belarus. But also they're being under heavy influence from Russian Federation. But to prove my statement about the real independent states, look, what happened for these years after the dissolution of Soviet Union in 1991? Moldova. Russian troops occupied part of Moldova called Transnistria from 1992. They have their army there from that time for 30 years, and they're not allowing Moldova to enjoy the peace. Georgia, 2008. Russian troops invaded Georgia and occupied part of Georgia, Abkhazia and South Ossetia, on the pretext of protecting people from Georgians. And that pretext they used now. They initially used a pretext that they're coming to Ukraine, as they call it, special military operation, which is nonsense. That's a full-scale invasion, unprovoked and unjustified. And pretext was that they're coming to Ukraine to denazify Ukraine, to demilitarize Ukraine, and to protect Russian-speaking population. All three notions are false, and I can easily prove it.
Okay, and you know, the whole conversation around NATO obviously is part of the discussion as well, especially from the side of the Kremlin. They don't want NATO to have a presence in the Ukraine, or Ukraine to be part of NATO. Is this also part of their reasoning?
Yes, definitely that was part of their reasoning. But I will allow myself to mention the pretexts they used. Initial was, as I mentioned, was denazification, demilitarization, and protection of Russian-speaking population. Then the second one was that we are creating nuclear weapons. The third one was that we are creating biological weapons. But then finally, around 12 days ago, insane war from Kremlin told again to Russian people that the real reason for our invasion to Ukraine, for our special military operation, is that we are defending the future of Russia, and we are defending future of Russian people, and that operation is preemptive one, since unless we start invasion, Ukrainians would attack us, which is complete nonsense. We never had any plans to invade to any country. All we want is let us live in peace and build our Ukraine the way we want it.
Yes, and a relatively new independent state as well. So there's lots of building to do in terms of systems and things of that nature, right? We're going to take a break. When we come back, I would like to ask, and we will discuss, the resilience of the Ukrainian people. I don't think anyone anywhere in the world expected this kind of unity And resilience from the Ukrainian people. It's a wonderful thing to see. I mean, in amidst a very difficult situation, it's a wonderful thing to see.
And also, my sister would like your president's phone number, if possible.
I will try to find it.
Don't. Please don't. Don't. It's 28 minutes to 9. That's right. Now, the Ukrainian ambassador to Kenya, Andriy Pravetnik is in studio with us this morning, and we are talking quite a bit off air as well. But let's get back into our discussion this morning, and I think the discussion revolves around the unity of the Ukrainian people. Now, the whole world, you know, we're seeing a lot of these, which is wonderful. You know, stickers and flags and football matches, the players wearing patches and things. But you know, if we're going to call a spade, this is a battle for Ukrainians to defend their land. And I don't think anyone in the entire world could have predicted the resistance and resilience and the unity of the Ukrainian people. Are you also surprised?
I think that I would not call that situation as a surprise, but I think that terrible actions by Russian Federation, that full-scale invasion, helped Ukrainian to stay even more united as before. We've all been striving for our independence, for our right to choose our own way, to build our country, to live the way we want it. And now 99.99%, if not the 100% of Ukrainians, are united as never before. And believe me or not, all Ukrainians are fully prepared to defend our country, to defend our land, to defend our future and future our kids. And I know from my friends in Kyiv that all people in our capital are stand together, and in case if Russian troops will try to attack our capital again, all people of my home city Kyiv will be prepared to defend it until very last sigh of a last soldier or last inhabitant of my capital. And that is really touching. I wish I would be there with my compatriots to defend my country, but I'm here and I'm trying to do with my colleagues here at the embassy whatever we can to people of Kenya, to people in neighboring countries of East Africa, to know the truth, to know what we are fighting for, and to know the terrible crimes Russian troops are committing in Ukraine even right now while we are talking.
Now, we are seeing a rise in fuel prices, in food prices. What would this continuation of this invasion mean for Kenyans?
It would be not fair if I would say that it will not be any negative implications for Kenya and many, many other countries all around the world as a result of that Russian invasion, because we all know that Ukraine used to be called and now regained this title of being breadbasket initially it was breadbasket of Europe, but now we are playing an important role to the world food security, because agriculture is one of the main sector of our economy. And for you to understand, last year, 2021, the total crop of grain was 80 metric million tons, which is a record high in the whole history of Ukraine. And we can provide food security to a large number of countries all around the world, including Africa, including Kenya, because Kenya imported a lot of Ukrainian grain. Definitely there will be some negative implications, since hostilities which are taking place not allow Ukrainian agricultural workers to work as during the peaceful time. But I would like to assure Kenyan public and all Kenyans that Ukraine and my compatriots were doing everything possible to start sown campaign on time. And it's about to start in 10 to 12 days. And we will be doing whatever we can to get a good crop and not to allow people in other countries to face these negative implications. But I would like to underline that in the first place, not Ukraine should be blamed for this possible negative implication. It's Russia which should be blamed for that, because it's Russia who started that full-scale invasion.
Sure.
And which, okay, preclude Ukraine to make this own campaign at full scale and to make sure that we have the same crop at least as last year. But again, sorry for repetition of what I have said, but it's important, and I would like all those who listen to us to hear that we will do whatever we can to make sure that we have a good crop, and we'll make sure that these possible negative implications will be brought to minimum.
Is there a double standard by the rest of the world? So let's take Europe, maybe the United States, about this whole situation, you know, the sanctions, et cetera, et cetera. But then at the same time, you know, allowing still gas to come through. Is there a double standard being set by the rest of the world in any degree, would you say?
No, I wouldn't say that it's a double standard. First of all, we are really grateful to all our partner countries, United States, Canada, the whole of the European Union, United Kingdom, for helping us to fight the Russian, to withstand Russian aggression and to fight for our freedom and independence. Secondly, when we are talking about sanctions, if you take a glimpse on these sanctions, initially, there was the amount of sanctions was relatively small. Then, with the start of invasion and with hostilities going on, and with Russian troops committing the crimes, war crimes, and crimes against humanity, the international community imposed stricter and stricter sanctions. And if we are talking about the gas and oil from Russia, United States already announced that they completely stop buying Russian oil and Russian gas. European Union is about to take a decision shortly. They will have a European Council tomorrow, mm-hmm. where that issue will be definitely discussed. They are about also to approve the blockade of buying Russian oil and gas. UK already approved a similar decision that they will stop buying Russian oil and gas closer to the end of this year. Means all the countries are prepared to stop buying Russian oil and gas. And as we know, oil and gas as the two main export items, probably not the right word, for the Russian Federation, and in a way getting the currency for that and sustaining their troops in fighting Ukraine. And that is why we are also campaigning all around the world, including Kenya, for the governments to impose sanctions on the Russian Federation, in thus not allowing Russia to finance the further invasion to Ukraine.
Okay.
What is the mood like on the ground in Ukraine? I'm sure you have loved ones still there. It seems like such a massive, massive thing to overcome. I mean, we don't know when is the end, or what are people feeling?
People feeling, on the one hand, and we already discussed that, people feeling unity and people feeling readiness to defend the country. On the other hand, people suffer from that because they're losing their loved ones. With me, my family, is safe, thanks God. But I also can share with you that my feelings, since my dad, who is 80 years old, he is in Kyiv now, And when I talk to him after the start of the Russian full-scale invasion, that dad, okay, I would like to evacuate you to a safe place. It will be better for you. He told me, no, son, I'm not going to evacuate anywhere. I spent all my life in this city, my wife is buried here, and I'm not going anywhere because I would like to be with my neighbors, with the rest of the family, with all those whom I love. And honestly, for me, it's a challenge since, okay, every morning I'm sending messages to my dad asking how he is, whether he's fine or not. Thanks God he's fine. He actually haven't experienced, the area, his neighborhood, never experienced any shelling or bombing. I pray personally, and then my kids, his grandkids, praying for his safety and security. And I really hope that we'll have an opportunity to hug each one in the near future.
Well, thank you so much for giving us that, because I feel like we get so desensitized to numbers and images of explosions and headlines. And it's so lovely to put my first Ukrainian interaction and have it here on 98.4 Capital FM. Thank you so much for sharing that. His Excellency Andriy Pravednik. By the way, you have to teach us something.
Oh, yeah. Teach us. You shared with me how to say love in Ukrainian. How do you say love?
Kochanya.
Kochanya. There we go.
Kochanya.
We'll be using that now. Yes. Yeah, kochanya.
Yeah. Beautiful. Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming in this morning. Thank you. We didn't get to all your questions, but we will send them across to the embassy, and maybe they can answer them for you. It's 6 minutes to 9.